This is Inside the Net, Episode 5 for December 27th, 2005, 37 Signals. How are you today?
Hey, Leo. I'm doing great.
Did you have a good holiday?
I'm still in Prince Edward Island on holiday, so it's going pretty well.
Wow. And is it snowy there right now?
It is snowy. We've had quite a bit of snow over the holidays, and it is slowly turning to rain, so it's getting a little bit messy. But it was nice and crisp on Christmas Day, which is great.
So who's on tap for episode 5 of Inside the Net?
For episode 5, we have a very special guest. We'll be talking to Jason Fried, who is the founder of 37 Signals, which is a small firm based in Chicago. I think they have 6 or 7 people, and they produce 4 web-based products: Basecamp, Backpack, Writeboard, and Ta-da List. Basecamp is probably their most popular product. This is an online project management tool, which is really inexpensive. They even have a free version. And we'll be talking to him a little bit about some of these products and what's in store for them for 2006.
And one thing that probably people may, if they don't know Backpack and Basecamp, may know them for is Ruby on Rails, the programming framework that they developed and use now and have given away, which makes web-based development of tools like this so much easier than it's ever been before. I mean, it's a really powerful tool.
It is. And they have a bunch of neat little projects on the go. They have a few books, and they have a very interesting blog, which is updated quite regularly with lots of good information. And again, you know, tons of tools. They started out as a small web design firm and have grown into quite an interesting company to keep your eyes on.
And like us, they work even the week after Christmas. Jason Fried, you're at work right now?
I'm working at home today.
Nice.
I work at home a couple days a week. Just I get more work done when no one's around.
How big is 37 Signals? Is it a big company?
No, there's only 7 of us. But there was actually just 5 of us until December 1st. We hired 2 more people, so there's 7 total. And 5 of us are in Chicago, and 1 of us is in Provo, Utah, and 1 of us is in New York.
And are you? How many biz guys? How many developers? Is it all developers? Or?
There are 4 programmers and 3 designers, and then I do all the business stuff as well.
You guys started in, I guess, 6 years ago, is that correct?
Yeah, started in 1999. But we started out as a web design firm. We didn't start as a software development company. We kind of transitioned into that around 2004, which we can talk about if you want.
I think that's one of the premises of this podcast is that a web designer is a developer, that websites now are applications.
Yeah, that's true.
And Backpack is a perfect example, you know.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And I think the other thing that we did was, and I'm starting to see this from other companies, is we built a tool that we needed, which was Basecamp at the time, and we ended up turning it into a product because if we need it, you know, we're not unique. There's hundreds of thousands of other companies just like us or businesses or whatever and our people. And so if we need it, someone else probably needs it too. And so I think you're seeing a lot of companies starting to build tools for themselves that they're then opening up to other people to use or to sell.
And how did you guys decide to start opening up Basecamp? And I think you started it, selling subscriptions to it, is that right?
Yeah, it's a subscription service. There's a free version, though. There's a free version of every tool that we have. And Basecamp ranges from $12 a month to $24 to $49 to $99 a month, depending on, you know, what level of service you need. But we decided early on that we wanted to make a business out of this and not just give everything away for free, then figure out how to make money off it later. I think that's a lesson that a lot of people should have learned is probably not the right way to build a business. That's what happened in the late 90s and early 2000s. So if you're going to build something to sell it, you should sell it right off the bat. And you know, it's a lot easier to do it that way than to give something away for free for 2 years and then try and figure out how to charge for it.
At what point did you make the transition from a web design firm to offering web services? Was there a moment when a light went on for you?
Well, you know, when we first launched Basecamp, which was in February of 2004, we didn't know what was going to happen. We had an idea that we had a number in our heads. Like, if we could get this much revenue per month after 12 months, we'd be pretty happy. And it turned out that we hit that number in about 5 weeks. So we realized, okay, there's something going on here. There's something to this. And we didn't actually officially stop doing client work until the middle of last year. So we were doing both for a while because Basecamp wasn't generating the kind of revenues we needed to run the business early on, but it slowly, you know, slowly grew into that. So we've kind of shut the door on client work at this point.
And how did you market Basecamp in terms of convincing people to go online and manage their projects online? Because I know, you know, it's quite popular these days. I've used it. It's a great tool.
Thank you. It was all word of mouth, actually. We haven't really spent any money on marketing. We've taken out a few Google AdWords here and there, but they haven't really done much. It's mostly just word of mouth. We use the blogosphere to really kind of get the word out. We have a very popular weblog, and other people we know have popular weblogs. We've told them about it. And it turns out that a lot of people who use our product also have weblogs, so they can spread the word themselves. So we've just kind of gone very grassroots with this and let the product speak for itself instead of trying to, you know, follow the traditional model, which is get a sales force out there and try and, you know, sell people something they may not need. We'd rather have people discover it on their own and figure out that that's what they need.
In 94, there can't have been very good tools for doing this kind of thing. What were you using?
Oh, in 2004?
Oh, 2004. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, we built Basecamp because we couldn't find anything else that we liked. We needed a tool to manage our own client projects, and we just couldn't find the right product out there. We looked at Microsoft Project, and that wasn't right for us. We looked at some open source tools, which there weren't many of them at the time, but we looked at a few, and they weren't right for us. We were basically using email, you know, at the time, and email is still good for a lot of things, but you know, once you really start getting involved in a project, email just doesn't work anymore.
Was it written in Ruby originally, or what? How did you develop it?
Yeah, so Basecamp was the first product that we ever wrote in Ruby, and it was also the first Ruby on Rails application. So we actually extracted the Ruby on Rails framework from Basecamp and then open sourced it.
So Rails was written as part of the Basecamp development, and then you said, wow, this could be a tool for others?
Yes, but although we didn't actually, we didn't think that we were writing Rails when we wrote Basecamp.
you were writing a tool to write Basecamp.
We were actually just writing Basecamp.
If we want to
build other apps, you know, we need to abstract some of the stuff so we can reuse it. And then we realized, hey, there's a framework here. Let's open source it so it can be improved by, you know, thousands of other people, and other people can use it. So it's something that just kind of happened by accident. There was no plan. We didn't plan on running a web framework. It just kind of happened.
In a way, Rails has become your best known product, though.
In some ways, yeah. I mean, certainly more people use our products, but Rails is something that's really kind of gotten us a lot of good attention, I think, and it's you know, earned us a lot of goodwill with the community since we're open sourcing it, and we're the biggest contributors to it as well. So we're constantly making it better. And out of the core team that works on Ruby on Rails, four out of 12 people work at 37 Signals. So we're definitely still the core contributors and trying to do our best to make it better. But we know there's other people out there who can do it better than we can, which is why we open sourced it.
Can you explain Rails just to the average person who hasn't heard much about it?
I can't, really.
No. It's too hard to explain.
Well, no, okay. Actually, all Rails is a web application framework, which basically just means that it's a set of tools that rests on top of a programming language to make it easy to do common things. So it makes it easy to create the account system for an application, or it makes it easy to create the, like if you're making a weblog, it makes it really easy to create the posts and the comments and the categories and all the stuff that's kind of common to a lot of products, and lets you kind of focus on what makes your product different. So you can code what makes your product different, and all the other stuff that almost every product has, like login and passwords and logging out and all that stuff, it takes care of all that stuff for you.
I mean, Ruby
does all the busy work.
Ruby was written for network development to begin with, but Rails really just kind of made it take off. I mean, it was...
Yeah. Ruby's been around, I think, for 10, 15 years, maybe. I think it's out of Japan, actually. It's a language out of Japan, and it was pretty obscure until Rails came around. Rails has really kind of got the notice, at least in the Western world. I'm not sure how big Ruby was in Japan, but I suspect it was bigger than in the Western market.
Was Backpack then your second product developed using Rails?
Actually, Ta-Da List was number two, and then Backpack came third. But everything we've done so far has been based on Rails, and everything we will do, at least in the near future, will be based on Rails.
And Ta-Da List is just a way to keep track of kind of everyday lists. It's a really simple application.
I really like it, though. I mean, in some ways, I like it the best of all your stuff. It's just very easy and straightforward, and gets the job done.
Yeah, it's the simplest tool we have. Like, you can't even make a simpler to-do list tool. It's just simply lists and no responsibilities, no dates, nothing. Just like make a list and add items and check them off when they're done. And so far, we launched that in January of 2005, so this year. And so far, over a million to-do items have been added to it. So it's taken off, and it's great. It's totally free, and lots of people use it for lots of different things.
So what I was reading somewhere, which I thought was kind of interesting, that you tend not to use any functional specification documents or diagrams when you're building any of your products, and you build the interface first, which is just a different way of doing things. But obviously, so you're paying a lot of attention to the front end experience within the products.
Yeah, our feeling is that there's nothing functional about a functional spec. So if we're trying to define functionality, let's just build the functionality and let that define it. And the way to do that is to start with the interface.
So your UI is almost a spec, really.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The UI is the spec. Instead of abstracting everything into words and sentences and paragraphs, which can be interpreted in different ways by different people. So you could have 10 people around a table all read the same paragraph and say they agree, but you don't really know if they agree until you're actually looking at something and using something. So our feeling is that the interface should be the spec. So build the screens first, define the customer experience first, and then let the back end, let the technology kind of make everything work, tie everything together. Instead of doing the technology first and then kind of trying to paint an interface on at the end, we'd rather paint the technology on instead of paint the interface on. So the other thing that allows us to do is stay in front of the customer experience for close to 95 to 100% of the time, instead of the traditional model, which is a lot of development, and then maybe the last 20% of the project is spent doing interface design. And you just, you know, by the time you get that out, you're just not really quite happy with it, but then it has to be released. But if you spend close to 100% of the time on the interface, by the time you release your product, it's almost like version 2 or version 3 of the interface, because you've been tweaking and adjusting it and making it better the whole way.
And what do you think makes a product like Basecamp different than, I mean, I've used Microsoft Project as well. What do you think makes Basecamp different and better?
Our take is that, you know, whenever people ask us how does your product compare to the competition or whatever, we always say that our products do less than the competition. And that's really a strategic thing. We believe that software is too complex, too bloated, does too many things, tries to solve too many problems, and our products just do a few simple things really well and then get out of your way. So we're really opposed to what we call clever software, software that tries to capitalize words for you when you don't want them capitalized, or makes bullet lists when you don't want bullet lists and things like that. We think that software should basically get out of your way. So a lot of the other tools that are out there, I think, do too much, or try and do too much, or try and be too clever, or try to solve too many problems, and try and solve too many complex problems as well. So our products solve simple problems, common problems that people have every day. For example, you know, I just need to make a to-do list for David so he can finish some things. Like, that's the kind of solutions that our products provide. They don't provide very complex, detailed, dependency-based to-do lists with all sorts of hierarchies and different levels. They just let you make simple lists and assign something to somebody. And that's what I think most people want. Certainly, there are other people who need a lot more than that, and that's fine, too. But our products really aren't for them. And let me say one more thing. One more thing about that. Is I think the less features you have, the bigger your market actually is. So every time you add something new to your product, in many ways you're actually reducing your market size, because every new feature is another level of complexity, is another interface thing that has to be on the screen that dilutes everything else that's there. And it also starts making your product more and more and more specific. And the more specific you are, the smaller your market is. So we'd like to make these general purpose tools that work for almost anybody who needs to get simple things done. And also needs to get complex things done, but wants to get them done in a simple way.
Mm-hmm. So who do you think is using products like Basecamp? I know, you know, it's fairly inexpensive to use. Like you said, there's a free version. I think it goes up to $100 a month.
Yeah.
What type of people are using it?
All sorts of people. Originally, we built it for web developers because that's who we were and that's the market that we knew. But we intentionally didn't really make it for web developers. We marketed it to web developers, but there's no specific features targeted towards web developers. So what's happened has been there's been designers using it, there's architects using it, there's teachers using it to manage their classrooms. Students use it to write collaborative papers and do collaborative assignments and projects with other classmates. A lot of universities are using it. People use it to manage home improvement projects. Lawyers use it, accountants use it. A lot of publishers actually use it to write books with their authors. So their author would upload a chapter of a book, the editor would, you know, edit it and maybe upload the new version and talk about the product and the project and maybe upload cover pictures and layout ideas and things like that. So just about any group that needs to collaborate on something is using it. So we're pretty proud of that, actually, that it's not a specific tool just for designers or just for educators. It's just a tool that anybody can use.
It's interesting because, of course, you're quite the opposite of Microsoft's design strategy. Do you feel that, in a way, you're making a manifesto for a new kind of software?
I hope so. All of our products, well, I shouldn't say all. Basecamp and Backpack, our two main products, actually have manifestos on their public sites talking about what we believe project management is and what we believe personal information management is. So I do think the less software movement, which is something that we've kind of coined as our battle cry, that less software is a bit of a manifesto. And it's basically saying that, hey, you know what? The traditional way of selling software and making more money off software is to continue to add new features. That's what the traditional software companies have to do because they have to ship CDs every year. And if there isn't something new, they can't sell a new version to you. With web-based software, of course, you can update it all the time. We make changes to our product every week. And it's always the latest version, so you don't have to, like, the subscription model allows us to make things better all the time instead of having to wait a year to make something better. So I think you're going to start to see a lot more web-based software come out that's really on par with desktop software and better in some respects.
The irony of it is that this is what Microsoft would love to have as a business model, but can't seem to convince people to do, pay every month for the use of their software.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're going to try. So next year, it seems like they've said, or they've leaked memos saying they're going to you know, move more into the web-based software market. And I actually think that'll be good for everybody in the web-based software market because in a lot of ways it'll legitimize web-based software. And because there's certainly a lot of people who are still worried about it and still don't feel comfortable about security and hosting data on other people's servers. But I think Microsoft will actually help give some people some confidence in the idea of web-based software, which will actually benefit everybody else.
Well, there's also the argument that we're going back to the bad old days of a thin client on right. our side and a big mainframe on the other side doing all the work.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in some ways that's true. I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, certainly one thing I think is very important is to realize that web-based software isn't perfect for everything, and desktop-based software isn't perfect for everything. There's different tools for different jobs. And when you're talking about collaboration, like tools that we build are all related to collaboration, the web is perfect because it's centralized, everybody can get to it. But if you're doing stuff that doesn't really involve collaboration necessarily, you don't need to get to it from everywhere, you know, the web isn't probably the best place for that sort of product. So it definitely depends on the tool and the job you're trying to get done.
And you have other tools. I know you talked about Basecamp and Backpack and To-Do List, and you do Writeboard as well, which is, what's that all about?
Okay, so Writeboard is another tool that we built for ourselves because we were actually writing a book, a new book, and we needed to collaborate on the book. And Writeboard is a very, very simple collaborative writing environment, web-based, of course, and it lets you write a document, which we call Writeboard, share it with other people, let them edit it. You can roll back to any previous version so you never lose any work. And you can compare versions. So you could say, like, this version versus this version, what's different, what's been removed, you know, what's new, things like that. And it's dead simple. There's no actual, you don't even have to sign up for anything. You just go to writeboard.com, writeboard.com, and just Name your Writeboard and give it a password, and you're good to go. And also, Writeboard is also integrated into Backpack and Basecamp as well. So you can use Writeboard standalone for free, totally free, or you can add Writeboards to Basecamp projects or Backpack pages.
So with tools like this that are free, I mean, Writeboard's free, Ta-da List is free, how are you guys planning to continue to make money? Is it on the subscription-based services or products like Basecamp and Backpack and other services or products?
Yeah, so our thing is we have a few pay products. Basecamp and Backpack are the two pay products right now. We're working on two more right now, actually, which we hope to have out in the first quarter of next year. And then we also give away little tools, which we basically abstract. Like, for example, Basecamp or Ta-da List kind of came out of Basecamp. The to-do list functionality in Basecamp was really popular, so we pulled that out, made it free, and called it Ta-da List so anyone can use it. So those products are essentially ads. In a lot of ways, they're ads for our pay products. And you know, they're not obnoxious ads, but they're like little free products that we kind of consider to be ads. So if you like this, you might like Backpack, or you might like Basecamp. Check them out if you want. If you don't want to, that's fine too, of course. You can use this for free as long as you want. So it's a great way to reach a lot of people who may not have paid for something off the bat, but get them kind of used to using software on the web, and then maybe they'll move up to our other products. And the numbers have shown that really works pretty well for us, actually.
You've created a really lovely little business model. I mean, you're a small, nimble company. You give back to the community with things like Ruby on Rails. You give away free stuff. You're making money on subscriptions by making simple, small apps. Do you think this is a model going forward for application development in general, or is this something others should be looking at?
I certainly hope so, and I do think that others are starting to do this. There's some other great simple tools out there that work really well, and you know, the challenge, of course, is that, you know, you have to have the right team first of all. So being small is one thing, but if you're small with the wrong people, that's just as bad as being big with the wrong people. You know, so you got to have the right team. You have to have the right design methodology. I think you have to have the right kind of DNA, which I really don't like using that term, like the DNA of something. But you kind of all have to believe in simple. And simple isn't something you just kind of paint on at the end. Simple doesn't mean white space, and simple doesn't mean just less of something. It means the right stuff, but only the right stuff, and getting rid of everything else. So I think you're going to see more and more companies pop up that build simple tools, that get simple things done, and then get out of your way. And I certainly, you know, even though we'll probably compete with some of them, I just think it's a good thing in the long run for software to get simpler instead of getting more complex. I mean, every new product that's out there today, from Photoshop to Word to InDesign to all these, you know, they're actually getting more complicated as they get older. Mm-hmm. And I think things should be going the other way around. Products should become more refined and simpler as they get older.
Well, it's really the old Unix philosophy of many small, sharp tools that you can combine together to make a larger.
Totally. And that also works with, I always kind of like to look at the craftsman metaphor. So people who really care about getting things done right have simple, specific tools. They have a bunch of different screwdrivers. They don't have like the Swiss Army knife. They have a screwdriver, and they have a hammer, and they have, you know, different types of knives for what they need. And so I think when you want to get something done, you want to do it right, you should use a very specific tool. Now, the thing is, you obviously don't have to log into a hammer, and you don't have to log into a knife. But on the web, you know, if there's 20 different small tools you're using, that does become a problem down the road when you have different logins for each one. So that's
how do you address that? Do you have a single sign-on, and how do you share information between tools? Is that RSS? So are we getting there, or do we have a long way to go with this kind of integration?
I think that single sign-on still isn't there yet. I mean, there's some companies trying it, of course. You have 6apart with their type key authentication, which is nice for their tools. I haven't seen a lot of other people use it, though, yet. You know, Microsoft tried with Passport a while back.
Would you welcome something like that? Would you spearhead something like that? I mean, you don't even have a single sign-on for your products.
We don't right now. We're actually working on something similar to a single sign-on for our product specifically. But, you know, I don't know who's going to solve this problem. It's definitely a problem to some degree. I don't think it's as widespread as people make it out to be. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And also, a lot of people just, you know, frankly, they use the same username and password everywhere anyway. And while that's probably not the best thing to do, that's what most people do. So I don't think this idea of I don't think if you have 20 tools, you actually have 20 different logins. You may have a couple logins. And I don't think that's that difficult to manage. But I definitely think it would be nice down the road one day to have a single sign-in if possible. But I do worry about people trusting that in itself. I mean, if you keep all your stuff in one place like that, people are definitely going to be even more nervous about keeping important information online.
And what about workflow? Because, I mean, that's one of the reasons Photoshop is so big, where we can do it all in one application. How about workflow between these small, simple tools?
Yeah, I think you're going to see more and more integration between the tools just by using simple APIs. Like Basecamp, for example, has an API, and people have been building little tools that work with Basecamp. I mean, Backpack, I'm sorry. We're working on a Basecamp API right now. A lot of the other tools have APIs. So I think you're going to start seeing these mashups, essentially, is what they're being called, of, people putting different tools together. And, I think at the end of the day, while that may be nice and it might work, but I do worry about the the fluidity of the customer experience moving from one tool to another and mashing stuff up. I don't know if that's really the best bet. I don't know if anyone has the answers quite yet, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I do think, though, that in the long run, people will be happier with simpler tools that work really well than these big kitchen sink products that try and do everything but don't do anything particularly well.
Mm-hmm. Can I get you just quickly to tell the story about 37 Signals and how you guys came up with the name, just because it's sure. Interesting.
Sure. So back in 1999, when we started the company, I had two partners who aren't with the company anymore, but we had two partners, and so there are three of us total, and one of them was watching Nova on PBS, the science show, and there was a show about, or an episode about the SETI project, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and he's a pretty curious guy, so he was just watching it, and they were talking about how they've analyzed all these signals from space, radio waves and radiation and whatnot. And out of the billions of signals, I think it was, that they'd analyzed, at least in 1999, there were 37 signals that were unexplained and signs of potential intelligent life. And so he thought that was pretty cool. He threw it by us. We thought that was pretty cool. The domain was available, so we took it. And there's really no hidden meaning behind it. It's just a cool name that we liked, and it's worked out well for us. I think it's distinctive, and a lot of other companies are starting to put numbers in front of their names, and we certainly didn't start that trend, but I think you're starting to see it more and more and more as a lot of domains just simply aren't available anymore, so people are kind of figuring out ways to have a unique name and still get that domain.
43 folders, 83 problems.
I know. Yours has nothing to do with your products, which makes it even more interesting, though. But
yeah,
everybody can get to your products from 37signals.com. Is that right?
Yeah. If you go to 37signals.com, there's four products that we have, and they're all listed clearly right there on the front page. There's four buttons to them, and there's more information about them below. If they're interested in checking that out. And we have, like I said, we have two more in development right now, and I can tell you a little bit about those if you want to hear.
Oh, would love to hear it.
Yeah,
sure.
Yes.
So one of them is it's called Campfire. And Campfire is, I can't say a whole lot about it yet, but it'll be up. It'll be the next new product that we have. It should be out hopefully in a few weeks, actually. And it's a tool that helps groups communicate online in real time. Quickly and with very, very low barriers to entry, and just letting people kind of chat essentially with one another online in real time. Now, there's certainly IM tools that do this, and there's other tools that do this, but we have a different take on it. We think that IM is not a really a great group chat tool. It's a great one-on-one chat, but not a really great group chat. So we have a few different takes on group chat online, which we're working on. And then the other product is called Sunrise. And Sunrise is like a CRM-ish tool. So customer relationship management is what CRM means. And we think that CRM, just like project management before Basecamp, CRM is too complex for small businesses. There's way too much stuff going on. You can look at Salesforce.com. You can look at Sugar CRM and a few other CRM tools. And they have like 25 tabs, and they have just tons of stuff. And while that might be good for some companies, we think, once again, software is getting too complex for that segment of the market, so for that tool set. So we're building a simple CRM-ish tool. It's not really CRM, but it's CRM-ish for small teams and small businesses. And that will hopefully be out in the next couple months.
What's
That's what we have on our plate.
What's the book about?
Okay, so the book... is actually done. We're just designing it right now. It's all about our design methodology, our development methodology, our ideas about small business and ideas about small companies and how you shouldn't take VC money and how you shouldn't staff up to a bunch of people and how you should embrace constraints instead of trying to push them out of the way and how you should work on projects part-time and not full-time and things like that. So it's all about the stuff that we've kind of realized and we've kind of been believing the past couple of years, and it's kind of put into a book form. We've been giving workshops on this stuff for the past couple of years. We've done 6 of them so far, and we're just kind of condensing it all into a book. And our whole methodology is something we call getting real. So it's all about building real things instead of abstracting everything into functional specs and charts and diagrams. It's actually building stuff and learning along the way and using the actual products that you're building as the spec, you know, as the learning process instead of trying to decide on a bunch of stuff and writing it down and then, you know, 3 months down the road realizing what you wrote down didn't matter anyway because you learned something new along the way. So getting real is our whole methodology for building things. We're putting it in book form. Should be ready in the next month or so, hopefully.
Sounds great.
And we'll be selling that direct, by the way. We published our first book with a publisher, and we just weren't super happy with that process. I don't think it was the publisher specifically. They were great, actually. It's just that we just didn't like the whole process of putting a lot of time into something and then letting someone else control it. So we decided we're going to self-publish this book ourselves.
That's great. And you guys have a couple other books out as well, I think, don't you?
We have one other book out. It's called Defensive Design for the Web. And it's all about designing for when things go wrong. So, you know, none of us really like to focus on the bad side of the web or the bad side of the experience. Whenever we build things, we always build the best case scenario. But the best case scenario is really the least case scenario. You know, people misspell things, or they misspell search terms, or they click on dead links, or they run into an error message. And, you know, designing that side of the experience is just as important, and in many cases more important, than designing the good side of the experience. So our book, Defensive Design for the Web, is all about how to design for when things go wrong. And there's 40 different guidelines from, you know, search results to how to word error messages to being preemptive about error messages to what to do if someone types in a bad URL, things like that.
Jason Fried, I just want to thank you for Ruby on Rails, which is amazing.
And
to put that out and give that out is a huge gift to the community. And in fact, helping your competitors, which you must have thought about briefly before you did it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's okay. I mean, there's always going to be competitors anyway. So, you know, there's no secrets anymore. You can't stop someone from doing something anymore. So we figured, you know what, in the end of the day, it's just going to benefit everybody, and that's a good thing.
It does. The more web services there are out there, and the more we use them, the more we trust them, the better for everybody.
Totally.
Although,
you know,
I think interoperability is going to become a big issue at some point, because I'm using a lot of these tools now and they don't talk to each other. So
yeah, I think you're right. I think that'll be a problem. But, you know, just like when cars first came out, you know, they didn't have seatbelts. You know, like, first they had to make a car that worked. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now. We're just trying to make products that work. And then, you know, as these products mature, we'll figure out ways to make them talk to one another.
That analogy has been used to explain Microsoft's dominance. That you may not like it, but the fact is the steering wheel's on the left, the gas pedal's on the right. It's all the same. You know it. And it may not be the ideal design, but at least we've all agreed upon it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, they didn't have that at first, of course.
No,
they had Excel,
nobody did.
You just get there. One of the things that we're doing, actually, is we've standardized the interface across all of our products now, except for Ta-Da List. But Writeboard, Backpack, Basecamp, Campfire, and Sunrise all pretty much look identical. So you can move across those and not have to relearn anything.
That
That's
helps.
Something we're spending
That's
a lot of
good,
time
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
helps a lot, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see where it all goes. But it's definitely exciting times, and it's fun to be part of it.
Well, and I think you're a leader. I mean, I think people look to you and say, wow, this works. They've made a business out of it. They've made a success out of it. And it's a great model, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's, first of all, I should say, none of this stuff is easy, but it's never been easier. So I think it's, you know, to start a small company these days, it's never been easier. To get customers, it's never been easier. I mean, the web's out there. You can communicate with millions of people for no money at all, and you can get the word out for nothing. So it's never been easier. And you know, it's great to see other companies starting to pick this up and
give it
a shot, at least.
What's your marketing budget? I mean, it's
we don't have one.
It's zero, right? So, I mean,
yeah, pretty much.
That's amazing. That's truly amazing.
So you have to make really good products that people like.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And it's similar to like what Amazon and Jeff Bezos believes. So Jeff Bezos doesn't spend any money on advertising. They used to spend a little bit of money. But what he's decided to do is he said, you know what? Let's put all that money into the customer experience. Let's improve the shopping experience for customers. And that's our advertising budget. That's, you know, that's advertising for us, a better product. And so we've kind of adopted the same ideas. Like, let's forget about spending money on advertising and whatnot. Let's just make the product as the best part we can possibly make, and the word will get out. The channels are there. The word will get out. The word will spread. And that's where we're focusing our energy these days. Yeah, so far, it's worked out really well for us.
It's amazing. I mean, really, we're seeing a complete revolution in the way business is done, and it couldn't happen without the web.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt about
it. It's just remarkable. I mean, it's wonderful. It's, you know, goodbye, GM. You know, I mean, and that's how it should be. That's how it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's the natural progression, I think. Yeah, you know, things get too big and bulky, and then the small guys come in and change the game.
You're the mammals.
And, yeah, exactly. And that's what's going on right now. And, you know, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see how Microsoft copes with this next year. And, you know, they're in a tough spot because, you know, they have these cash cows they have to protect. And, you know, to do the web-based software on a subscription model, you know, can they make the same kind of money that they make off their software, you know, their traditional software? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Or will customers even tolerate?
They're no idiots, though. They're smart people over there, and we'll see. Oh, yeah. We'll see what happens.
It's just tough. If legacy will kill you every time, and that's where they stand, you know.
Yeah, at least they have, you know, Ray Ozzie's at the helm there, the CTO, and he's a really sharp guy, really smart. He's been through this. He's built other products like this. So he's a good guy to have at the helm.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It's interesting that Ray took the challenge. And, yeah.
I think so, too.
If anybody can do it, Ray can. I just hope he doesn't go down with the ship.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell.
Jason, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Jason.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was great talking to Jason. I've been using Basecamp for a while for all the web design projects that I work on, and I don't know what I would do without it. So
really? You're a customer.
I am a customer. I've been using Basecamp, I think, for, you know, just over 6 months. And
Why is it better than a big power tool like Microsoft Project?
Well, the thing that I really like about it is that I can jump on any computer and I can log into the project that I'm managing and I can get all the information. I can post messages. I can give people such as clients access to Basecamp to log in, and they can have their own login and they can post comments. So it's very interactive. So I think that it focuses more on the community side and the communication and collaboration side of projects than something like a Microsoft Project, which seems to be, you know, one person inside that program managing the project at one desktop computer. This really opens it up and lets you do a lot more from wherever you are working, which tends to be, you know, what we do these days is work from all over the place and with a bunch of different people.
Are there tools you miss or features you wish you had that you'd have in a bigger program?
I don't find there's anything that I really miss in Basecamp. It seems to have everything that I need. You know, you're able to set up timelines, key deliverables. You can section the project into different components, so it has different phases. And again, you can add a bunch of people. You can have multiple projects going on at the same time if you buy a more expensive version of Basecamp. So there's nothing it's missing. I mean, project management is pretty basic stuff at the end of the day. The only thing that, you know, it doesn't really take care of, obviously, is the budgeting side of things. So you might have to go elsewhere to, you know, get into managing budgets and dealing with financials. But if you're, you know, just want something that a client can use and your team of people working on a project can use, it's a really, really great tool.
Tell me a little bit about Backpack. You've shown both of these on Call for Help. In fact, I wouldn't know about 37 Signals if it weren't for you. And then, of course, Ruby on Rails. But tell me a little bit about Backpack. How do you use that?
Backpack, I haven't used it as much as Basecamp, but I have used it. I think Backpack is more for someone who isn't managing projects. It's more for information management. So if you are doing sort of personal management of information like to-do lists and you have notes and email reminders and mobile phone reminders, it's that kind of tool. So it would be more of...
You could use it personally, but it's also good for sharing data, right?
Yes, you can share data and you can use it for business uses, but if you want something that is a little more robust and better for overall project management, Basecamp is the thing to use. And Backpack is great. I've used to-do lists, which are, you know, as we've talked about, it's great.
It's really simple.
it's simple and it does what you know, it says it's going to do in a really easy way. And I haven't used Writeboard at all, but I definitely want to try that one out as well.
I think the key ultimately, though, is going to be, as I said with Jason, somehow to, maybe it's RSS. I mean, that's really what RSS is kind of designed to do, share this information and have it interact with other, you know, for instance, I'd love to have a way to automatically take my Ta-Da to-do list and put it on my Palm PDA, things like that. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, there's things I'd love to be able to do. For example, I know I've talked to you before about the web application BlinkSale, which I love for online invoicing. I would love to be able to use Basecamp with BlinkSale or something like that, where you can integrate a bunch of these different tools, because I think you're right, you know, having to log in to different tools and they don't really talk to each other can be a bit of a problem as you go on. Hopefully, eventually, they will be able to mash up a little bit more.
Yeah, it's coming, I think. In many ways, those mashups really are kind of the first tentative steps in that direction.
They really are. And what's nice, I think, with all of these tools is that the average person doesn't have to be, you know, really tech savvy to go on and sign up for an account and start using it right away. That's the best part about all of them.
Yeah, yeah. Amber, I'm so glad we could do this the week after Christmas. We'll be back next week with more on Inside the Net, more conversations with the movers and shakers in Web 2.0.
We sure will.
Yeah, thank you. And have a happy New Year.
You too, Leo. Thanks.
All the best. And thanks to AOL Radio for providing the bandwidth for this podcast at AOLmusic.com. And, of course, for broadcasting the show on their podcast channel. For Amber MacArthur, I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on Inside the Net.